Hi there and welcome.
You're listening to Animals and Us, Voices of a New Paradigm.
My name is Avantika and I'm a researcher exploring animal consciousness, environmental sustainability, and planetary health. I want to help bring animal perspectives to the table and transform our relationship with the natural world.
And I'm Barbara. I'm an animal communicator and retired veterinarian. My true passion is exploring the hearts and souls of animals and helping people come to a much deeper understanding of who the animals truly are at their core.
This podcast is for anyone who loves animals and nature and has an interest in their own personal and spiritual development. We'll bring you powerful conversations with fascinating people about animal and nature sentience, consciousness, and communication.
Thank you so much for joining us on this journey of love, respect, understanding, and care for the fellow beings who share our beautiful Mother Earth with us. Hi, and welcome to Animals and Us, Voices of a New Paradigm. And this is Barbara Shore. I'm with a really special person that I'm quite excited about. His name is Dan Wapapa. And he's a Native American who lives where I live in Ashland, Oregon, and has been an Indigenous elder for some time. Last summer, I went to Indigenous Day at SLU University here and heard Dan speak, and I was so impressed that I knew I had to meet him. So we're going to have a little conversation. So welcome, Dan.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm so glad to have you here. And maybe we could start with a little bit of your background. And, you know, I know your father was a spiritual teacher and you moved a bunch of times. And I'd just like to hear how you got into what you're doing now.
Well, I'm doing a lot now. So I grew up going ceremony and people's houses to spiritual gatherings, a circuitous route around the United States a couple times a year, 18 schools growing up. But my education was incredible because of all the ceremonies that I've been brought to and participated in. And so it was a rich learning history. And then I come to the realization, you know, that, well, I've always realized, but I'd never really actually enacted that Native ways are about food, you know, and they're about taking care of our elder relatives. And it's about that connection. And it's about family and community and all these things, you know. And so really, and all of that starts with the food, you know. And so I started focusing on food encouraging life. And so that's why not only do I teach traditional ecological knowledge, but I also teach permaculture. I've gotten a permaculture certificate so that I could better educate myself and educate others. So I go out and teaching. And as far as I know, I'm the only Native American male that is going out and teaching. And I'm not even sure of any females that are going out and teaching. I know there's females that are teaching within their own communities with the PDC, but not going out and teaching places. So I might be the only Native person with the PDC traveling and teaching places.
You mean teaching permaculture?
Teaching permaculture, yes.
So for people that don't know, can you just briefly say what permaculture is about?
Permaculture is basically trying to create systems that feed us and support life other than humans as well. So to be in balance and harmony with that which gives us life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They give you a number of tools, a set of ethics, principles to guide you through, and all tons of techniques. So And it's basically science coming from indigenous cultures from around the world. And then along the road, all other people putting all their scientific technologies to permaculture. So it's a really well-rounded, I don't know what you would call it, a movement, I guess, really well-rounded movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember learning a little tiny bit about permaculture years ago, and I had this wonderful garden when I lived in Colorado that was a permaculture garden, and I would sit in there with the plants, and it was just so beautiful. I just loved it.
Yeah. When my mom comes and visits me, she hangs out in my garden, my food forest.
Your food forest. I love that.
Yeah, I have a garden and a food forest.
A garden and a food? What's the difference?
Well, a garden is annual. A garden is basically a place where it's in constant phase of succession because it's annual plants. Succession is when basically you have a prairie, and then you have all these pioneer plants moving in, and these are the annuals, and they're followed by longer lived perennials, pioneer trees, aspens, cottonwoods, the fast growers, fast livers, fast dyers. And so they contribute carbon and all this to the soil. So, garden is in the succession state of that. So between a meadow and mature forest. And food forest is one less succession stage than an old growth forest and a full on forest, so, or a woodland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know in the indigenous culture, I know you teach about indigenous perspectives. So how do you view the plants and the animals that you live with? I know it's a whole different way of looking at things than most American traditional, Western culture. What's the indigenous perspective about that?
We see them as nations, as relatives. We see them as elder relatives. And we call them elder relatives. So whenever you hear elder relatives, they're not talking about elder people. They're talking about the plants and animals and the stones and the stars and all these things, So these are the elder relatives that were here placed before us to help give us life. And we are the last placed here. And it's been given, we've been given these minds to be able to organize all of this stuff and become beneficial creatures on the land of what science calls keystone species.
So we are the keystone species.
In a hierarchical sense, so that's more of an ego system rather than an ecosystem, So the ecosystem is where we are just one animal amongst many. An ego system is where we're the top of the pyramid.
Yes. Yes. And that's exactly what this podcast is about.
Actually the opposite of the way natives see it, where because the way society is now, they're not at the top of the pyramid. They're at the bottom of a funnel, pouring into their mouths because they're not returning anything. Human beings aren't returning to life, aren't supporting life. We've lost 68% of our elder relatives. And so we are hurting. And they're the ones that created all this, what they call wild wilderness is heavily object to, because that's the true civilization out there. The further you get away from that true civilization, the more savage you become. And so we need to be able to take care of our elder relatives and be in relation with them, learn more about quantum physics, because quantum physics is actually indigenous way of thinking. Everything's connected. We're all quantumly entangled. There is no separation. Unified field theory, all these things, concentric circles. So and we need to return to our kin-centric relationship to our elder relatives.
Yeah. So why do you object to is it the word wilderness you object to?
Absolutely. It's not wild. It's more organized than this society is. It's far more organized. and regenerative than this society is. That's not wilderness out there. That's civilization. What we're living through right here is colonization. Well, so we've had the hood pulled over our eyes, that we've been had our critical thoughts stolen from us and given us a healthy portion of cognitive dissonance and doublethink in this colonized society. Yeah. We have to find our way through these ways. We are coming up on a crossroads of prophecies, and many have come to pass, and many are coming to pass right now. There are warnings that we've ignored, and they're occurring. So we're on the verge of a purification, I'm an apocalyptic optimist. I think that, like a Crazy Horse's prophecy said, things will get bad, and then things will get terrible. But in the end, only the children of the Creator will unite under the Tree of Life. And so I feel that we have to unlearn a lot of lessons that we have learned in order to come to a true society. And that unlearning is the colonization mindset that has been given to us. Because we're all tribal peoples, but we're all indigenous from somewhere. And we all have that deep within us, that epigenetic knowledge, that epigenetic wisdom that our ancestors gave to us, you know. My people have it more recently, you know, since we've been colonized only 500 plus years, you know. Europeans have been colonized for thousands of years, ever since the Fertile Crescent, you know. So it's a lot of damage, a lot of war. The grain culture is very, war and famine is endemic to it. And that has caused a lot of suffering in the European mindset, and it has brought them away from their tribal ways. Because of this grain culture, developed a very violent religion in order to enforce the grain culture. So the grain culture demands that all the land be denuded, and all the texture, all the animals be chased away, so that they can put wheat, some kind of a grain, cereal grain, into the ground. And when that happens, you have to remove, you can no longer live with your deities. You have now have sky gods. And their sky god is a sun analog of going down and dying for 3 days. And the Orion stars, the three kings, pointed to where he rested for 3 days. And then after 3 days, a resurrection coming back north, promising salvation. That's how you can tell Christianity is a Northern Hemisphere religion. And the grains, because the country was horizontal, everything transferred, all the agriculture transferred that way. That's why we have so many Asian pears and Japanese varieties. But they don't transfer well north and south. So the grain culture transferred, and it produced a population boom, because the more grain that you have, the more grain that you could store, the more grain that you have, the more babies that you have, the more babies that you have, the more grain that you need. You know, so it's a self feedback loop of population explosion with grains.
So you're saying that the huge population that we have now on the earth is part of the grain culture, kind of like?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I'm saying that, and as a matter of fact, it's the final nail in the coffin to dark skin amongst the Northern Europeans, because they don't no longer have the horticultural diet. They lack the vitamin D in their diet. And that's why the Vikings became so powerful, because they had cod that they powered them. That's how it became so powerful. And, you know,
wait, they had what? They
cod. Had what? Cod.
Cod. Fish. Oh, the fish.
Yeah. Okay. And so, at the time, because war and famine is endemic to grain culture, most of the people then were having a lot of starvation sicknesses, scurvies and whatnot. They're on the average 5 foot high, and a lot of contortion of the bodies because of lack of nutrition, because of the grain diet. Wow. So, yeah. A lot of history, you know.
Yeah.
And really, that we need to return, and it's enforced by the whole religion thing. You know, it's like the wrong brother lost in Cain and Abel. You know, one was the shepherd who was in touch with the harmonies and the cycles of life and where the plants grew and when it rained and when it sunned and all this stuff, you know, and the other one was the agrarian and the agrarian one. So, and Eve was the embodiment of all earth-based cultures, and earth-based cultures, Eve had to fall ignominiously in order for a sky god to rise after 3 days of death.
So wait, can you talk more about what do you mean by sky god? What are you talking about?
Yeah. Well, we live amongst our deities as indigenous people worldwide. We live amongst our creator, where the spirit world overlays this world. It's like a torus. It's like the half top is a physical, the bottom part is a spirit world. When we're in a sweat lodge, all these people are sitting in here, have a reflection in the spirit world of these people sitting there in their ceremonies, and they're connected by these four doors in the sweat lodge. And so we see the half of the sphere, but it's a full sphere. And so, and there's a toroid that goes through the fire pit and goes around the people and comes like this, and it's like a spinning donut. And so, and I assume that the, at some point they're going to find that that's the way the universe is shaped, because this is the way our ceremonies work. It's a toroid. So what was the question again?
We're talking about the sun god and what that means.
Oh yeah, and so we live with our deities, and so our world is we live amongst our creator. You know, our creator is Ishpeming, the universe, and so the Lakota call it Takuskanskan, the energy behind the energy, or that which moves things. And we live amongst that. We're a part of that. You know, there's no separation, you know. But once you have this, you have denuded the land, there's no for that God to live, for that these deities to live. And so you have to have a place for them. And of course, you have to put them in the sky because it's higher than the human beings, you know. So, yeah, sky god. And sky, Jesus is a sun analog. Yeah. Jesus died 3 days, crown of thorns, sun, rays of the sun, you know. All that, you know, Jesus' story is repeated many times prior to his birth. There's many gods that are prophets that have been born of a virgin mother, and the three kings, and all. And it's a repeated story throughout history. You know, Jesus is just the latest, the most recent incarnation of that same story.
So that story, was that part of Native American culture in some way?
It is not. I'm just highlighting the difference between grain culture and horticulture. Mm-hmm. So they call us hunter-gatherers, but mm-hmm. really we were horticultural societies. Some of us were agrarian, like in the south of the snow belt. That's where all the furrows, all the rows of crops are. But north of the snow belt, that's where the permaculture is. That's where you have the forest of chestnuts and hickories, all perfectly spaced, and blue fields of blueberries and strawberries, and where they grew the best, you know, in cultural burnings every 4 to 6 years, coast to coast. This whole United States, as so-called United States, what we call Turtle Island, used to be a food forest from coast to coast. You wouldn't be able to starve going from one coast to the other coast. So, and we lived amongst our deities, and living amongst your deities brings health to where you were living.
So do you see all these deities as outside of yourself, or do you feel like human beings and animals and everybody is part of that deity?
We have no concept of outside of myself.
Mm-hmm.
So everything is within ourselves. Everything is connected. I am connected to the non-planet Pluto. You know, we're connected. You and I right now are connected to the fish at the bottom of the sea. You know, and it, all to the universe everywhere that was created. What they think is the big bang, where we're all quantumly entangled where we all come from. And so there is no separation.
So the deities that you talk about are part of us. I mean, we're all part of everything, correct?
Yes, absolutely. The ceremonies are kind of like mnemonic devices tell us where the important things are. Life, mm-hmm. water, you know, take care of the elder relatives, you know. In permaculture, they have a concept called zones. Zone, and it's about energy usage. Zone one is your house. Zone two could be your herb garden. Zone three could be where your chickens are. Zone four is maybe where you put your cows in your pasture. And zone five is the wilderness, you know, and where you'd never go. But that is countercultural to my people's zone five, because that's where you go. You know, my people's word for old man is Aki Wainzi, earth caretaker. And so that's where we did our work, was out in zone five, is taking care of our elder relatives and doing the cultural burns and making sure there's no aggressive species taking over, you know, the whole invasive species debate. There's no debate amongst natives. These plants have something to teach us. We don't. And we're slow to learn these lessons. And so these invasive species at some point are going to come into balance, maybe not in our lifetimes, you know, but at some point they're going to teach us lessons that we don't know yet, because all of these elder relatives, all these plants and animals, as they put them, all these nations are more important than us, human beings. Because they contribute to life. They make the life happen. They contribute to the cycling of the carbon and nutrients. And what do humans do, you know? We've got the funnel in our mouth.
Yeah. So what tribe did you grow up in? What tribe was your father from?
My dad, he was Kickapoo and Sac and Fox. And my mother is Ojibwe from Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And I grew up amongst my mother's people. Going to ceremonies up there.
Yeah. So, you know, mostly what we've talked about on this, it's called Animals and Us on this podcast. Can you tell us, huh?
It's all related.
Yeah. Can you talk about the animals and your perspective, the Native perspective about our animal nations?
They all have a medicine to bring us. The man who married my wife and I, his vision, he went on a vision quest, and he was given the vision of by a spotted elk from the north, gave him the power to heal. The spotted elk of the north cannot give another spotted elk of the north or a bear the power to heal, can only give that to human beings. They love us. They take care of us. There's an old trope that says the world would be much better without human beings. It would be much greener and more full of life. And that could be true, you know, but all these animals, they love us, you know. They want to see us succeed. They want us to grow into maturity, because right now we're in a very, very immature state as a nation. Human beings are, you know, and so we need to mature to the point of where they are and start contributing to life and start returning to being a beneficial creatures upon this land. To start organizing this life to encourage more life and more biodiversity.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I just finished a book about elephants. And what I do is I talk to the elephants or whatever animals telepathically. And they called us babies. They said we're like kindergartners. And they said, when you're working with a little child, you know, you can't condemn them and criticize them. You have to just be gentle with them and teach them. So human beings need to be taught, because we're pretty immature. Whereas the animals, that's my perspective too. They're a lot more mature and wise than a lot of us are.
Yeah, it's the same with trees. You know, you can't take a tree like an oak and plant it in the middle of a field and expect it to survive, it's like asking a child to go to college. You know, there's a whole succession that has to happen in order for that oak to have the highest way to survive. And all these pioneer plants and all these nitrogen fixers have to go in front of it to condition that soil so that oak can survive. So the very same analogy there.
Yeah. And you have told me that you have some animal stories. Do you have any you want to share?
Yeah, and we're in a good time for it. Because the thunders haven't happened yet.
Still... What do you mean the thunders haven't happened?
Yeah, with the seasons change. We don't tell stories of animals in the summertime when they're busy because it's disrespectful, you know, and we want to respect them. So we wait till they're sleeping or in torpor or in minimal, you know, so minimal activity so that we can tell stories about them and respect them, you know. And right around the time the thunders happen in the spring is when the sap starts running and when the animal starts waking up and when the leaves start opening and the buds start opening and stuff like that. And life starts returning. You know, the power from the earth comes up and encourages life.
Well, we're kind of there right now. We're just starting that, aren't we?
Yes, we are. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's not too late to tell animal stories.
No, not at all. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So I guess I would like to start off with our creation story because everyone keeps calling this place United States or the New World. You know? It's very offensive. There's a long history here. Of Turtle Island, ancient cultures, far more sophisticated than the Europeans were able to understand when they first landed here. So the creation story of our turtle, there's two stories. One is a sky woman who is falling. She's looking through a hole in the ground. And she sees this little blue thing out in the darkness, and she's wondering what that was, you know. And then somebody, and she's picking, you know, roots from the tree of life, and she picked a root, and she saw this hole there, and so and she looking down at the earth and saw this little blue dot, and she really intrigued her, and so. She something happened to where she was pulling and she fell through the hole, and she was falling toward the earth. And when she started coming close to the earth, that the birds noticed her, the geese noticed her, and they said, "Hey, there's someone here who's flying with us, but she doesn't have any wings." And the other one says, "That means she can't fly. So maybe we should help her. Because it looks like she's falling." And so sure enough, they helped her and they brought her down and they set her on a log. And and so at this point, there's another version of the story called Winnebujou. So Winnebujou and Sky Woman perform the same role here. Winnebujou is a man. He is a trickster. And he's a very sacred being, half spirit, half human. And he's goofy. He's very wise. He's always hungry, you know. So depending on where you come from, this is the same story involving Winnebujou or Sky Woman. And so I'm going to pick off from Winnebujou because that's the way I learned it. So Winnebujou was floating on this log. All animals were taking on the log from all flyers, and all of us come and land on the log. And Winnebujou was looking around, kind of paddling around, looking for land. And it's been a long time, and he can't find any land. And all the animals had agreed that they just can't continue this way. So Winnebujou says, "I know. I think I'll dive down and go get some earth, you know." And so he dove down, and it was too deep for him. So then came a kingfisher. Or hell diver. He says, "I can try, I'm a really good swimmer. So he goes way high in the sky, and he came crashing down in the water, splash. And he flew under the water, and he flew down and down and down and down and down. And he was out of breath, and he came back up and really flew, and almost passed out by the time he hit the surface. And then he goes, I can't find any earth down there. It's too deep. And one by one, the animals tried, the otter tried, he tried, and it was too deep, you know. And pretty soon they were all kind of looking around and looking at failure, you know, because none of them had gotten so far deep to find the earth, until little muskrat says, I want to try. And everyone looked at muskrat and they said, oh, you're too small. You're not a really good swimmer, because you won't get very far. And Winnebuji says, well, you know, everyone got to try, so muskrat gets to try as well, you know. And so sure enough, muskrat tried, and he was gone for longer than all the other animals. And they were starting to worry really, really about him. And they saw air bubbles come up, and they had known that they had lost their brother muskrat. And sure enough, a little while later, his body come floating to the surface. And the morning of all the animals, they laid a muskrat on the log and was singing songs for him. And then Winnebuju noticed his hand was closed, and he opened up his hand, and sure enough, he saw some grains of earth in there. And Winnebuju says, oh, muskrat has accomplished his purpose. He sacrificed his life so that we could have this blessing. So who here would be willing to carry this earth? And the turtle, she came up and she says, I will bear this earth. So put it on my back. And so they put it on the back of a turtle and a Mikinuk. Niwin Newton called the four winds, and it blew on this turtle's back, blew on this earth, and said great prayers and blew and sang great songs, and this earth started spreading on the turtle's back, and it started going further and further and further, and they kept on singing, and they kept on blowing, and they kept on praying, and the land kept on going and going and going, and pretty soon we had the whole land laid out before them, and they all got off the log and jumped on the land, and then Wolf, Maingan, and Winnebuju were put here on earth together. So they spoke the same languages, had the same ceremonies. And it was at this time, Winnebuju told Maingan, Wolf, to go and see how far this land went. And Maingan went, and he was gone for a lifetime. And he came back an old man, and he goes, I can't find the end of this place, so we're just going to have to trust that it's big enough. And so that's how this land got turned to be Turtle Island, you know, so that's why we call it Turtle Island. It's our creation story. And that the Mayinga and the human beings, the indigenous people, we're connected that way because we're put on this road together, quantumly entangled. So whatever happens to the wolf happens to the indigenous. Whatever happens to the indigenous happens to the wolf.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty powerful. Mm-hmm. And the wolves, oh my gosh, wolves are hated by some and adored by others, and they have their problems.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Thank you. That was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Any more? Do you have any coyote stories?
I'm not a West Coast native.
So we don't tell coyote
stories.
We tell Hoosier
stories.
Okay. I love coyotes. Yeah.
Yeah, we don't have any coyote stories.
You don't have a trickster?
Winnebuju was a trickster.
Okay, so Winnebuju is like the coyote of the Western.
Exactly. Tribe. Yes.
That's great.
Yeah, and the Lakota have one. Iktomi, the spider, he's another trickster.
Spider. I thought Spider Woman created the world in some.
Yes. Yes. So There's a power called the contrary power, the balance. Okay, the Winnebuju is the balance. The Heyoka medicine people are the balance. The Spider Woman, the trickster, is the balance, and all that is power. It is all power. So, and respect. So yes, Spider Woman in many cultures created the world because she is very deserving of respect. My culture, we don't kill spiders. There are elder relatives. They say my culture says that spiders were here after all life had gone by, and they were the only animal on the face of this earth at one time. They spin their webs and they go up into the atmosphere and they freeze. And so,
What do you mean they freeze?
They go up in the atmosphere and they freeze because it's freezing temperatures up there.
Oh. And then do they die?
No, they came back down and brought more life.
Wow.
So that's a parallel to the Spider Woman tale. And if you introduce spiders into a biosphere, you will increase the diversity by introducing those spiders. And same with wolves. Wolves will increase the diversity, biodiversity, and change the course of rivers.
Well, we've seen that in Yellowstone.
Yes.
Same
with spiders.
Same with predators.
Predators are very necessary. You know, the wolves, the coyotes are very necessary. They're the balance, you know, the vultures, you know, the cleaners. You know. Mm-hmm. You can't just have the eagle thunderbird all the time, you know.
Yeah.
You got to have the trickster.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So are there any more stories?
Yeah, I guess since I mentioned thunderbird, we'll go ahead and tell you about the times when the human had lost their way. And they were messing up so bad, they were making things terrible for all the other animals everywhere. And all the other animals said, man, these humans, they're just unruly. What are we going to do with these people? And it goes, let's talk to the creator. Maybe the creator can remove them, purify them, and we can have this place to ourselves without these hurtful human beings. And so all the animals had agreed to do this. And then an eagle, he was flying by and he goes, hey, wait a minute, what's going on here? So he goes down to all the animals where they were meeting and in council. And he says, what are we talking about here? All the animals says, well, these humans, they're just so terrible. You know, they just lost their way and they're always warring and they're picking, overpicking stuff. And they're just denuding the place, you know? And says, we talked to the creator and we asked the creator to purify them. And the eagles, and he agreed. And the eagle says, hey, wait a minute. I fly everywhere. I see many, many people. I see the promise of these human beings is great, is incredible. And we need them. As a matter of fact, they will become very important to us one day. And so the all the animals says, yeah, but they're hurting us now, you know? So, because what if you want, you go talk to the creator. And so the eagle decides to go talk to the creator. And so the eagle flies and flies and flies high and leaves earth and flies and flies and goes around the sun and scorches his wings going around the sun. And behind the sun, there's goes into the presence of Gichi Manidu, a great mystery. And says, our great mystery is not a man god, it's not a female god, it's a great mystery. And so the great mystery, he tells the great mystery, he says, I fly everywhere and there's a promise of these people is very beautiful and we really need to encourage their life. And so I heavily disagree with wiping them out. And the creator says to the eagle, says, very well. Says, out of respect for you, we will honor these people and we'll save them. But from here on out, when they think of you, they will think of them, and when they think of them, they will think of you. So you will be connected this way. And so the eagle says, "Okay." So he flew back to the earth, and he flew and he approached the animals who are still in council. And he started telling him of the words of the Creator and what the Creator had said. And as he was telling him this story, he grew across the sky. His wings went across the whole of the sky, and his eyeballs turned to copper, and he shot lightning out of them. And so the eagle turned into the thunderbird. And the thunderbird goes around because we're in its care, goes around at noontime every day looking for sweetgrass smoke, because he knows where there's sweetgrass smoke, there's going to be people going to be putting down tobacco. And tobacco was for asking. And he's going to carry that tobacco to get you money to do the great mystery for those prayers to be answered.
Oh.
And there's another story about how the Thunderbirds Thunderbird children are very, very rambunctious, very wild. And so the elders, Thunderbirds, built up for them a big field in the sky, and they put big cloud banks on all sides, and they gave them sticks of lightning, and they gave them a lightning ball too, and they batted around this lightning ball with these sticks of lightning, and they had ruckus games up in the sky, and you could see when the Thunderbirds were playing the lightning up in the sky. Then one time these Thunderbirds were having a particularly fun game, and one of them whacked that lightning ball out of the arena. It bounced off the cloud bank and came hurtling down to earth. And when it hit the earth and smacked the earth and skipped off the earth. And all the sparks from that skipping turned into lightning bugs. And where that lightning ball hit, that's where Hudson Bay is. And so that's how we got the game lacrosse, the little brother of war. That's the first thing to do before we go to war is one of the final things that we do actually before we go to war is play the stick game so we can avoid war.
Wait, I don't get the connection. I don't know anything about lacrosse though.
So lacrosse is they call the little brother of war. The fields could be miles long. You could have 100 people on each team. And so it could be like goalposts could be in one village to the other village type of thing, you know. So or it could be smaller, you know, with a few people in it, you know. So there's a spiritual connotation to a chance luck. All this stuff. There is no chance. There is no luck. There is a connection. There is a divinity. So when you play a game, that everything is in the native mind is concentric circles, just like the atom is to the solar system. You know, for example, you know. So the lacrosse game is a smaller concentric circle of war. So rather than two warring parties going at each other, we're going to have two teams because that's the smaller concentric circle and they'll go at each other. And an even smaller concentric circle of that would be two councils coming together. The smaller concentric circles, that would be two families coming together or two human beings coming together. These are all concentric circles that get bigger and bigger and bigger. So they all have like I said, there is no luck. There is no chance. There is a connection to natural law. The more you are connected to natural law, the better your luck will be. Because if you go against natural law, naturally, bad luck.
So could these games, if people are playing the lacrosse, could that prevent war? Could it avoid war?
That's what it was for. Yeah, that's what you used it for. Not only for entertainment, but a tribe would go against one tribe and settle their issues on lacrosse.
Uh-huh. I mean, rather than going to war.
Yeah, settle their issues.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Wow. Boy, there's so much. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you.
Yes, absolutely.
Is there anything else you want to say? Anything you want to talk about?
I guess I kind of want to I'm curious on more what you do.
Well, I do telepathic communication with animals, which means, of course, animals don't speak English, but my understanding, it's part of that great mystery, actually. My understanding is that I can connect with animals in a spiritual way, energy. We just exchange energy. And I can sense their emotions and their thoughts. And my brain automatically translates that into English so that I can understand it and other people can understand it. So the information I get is either through my writing or I can speak it. You know, it's like I kind of, my energy combines or melds with the energy of the animal or a group of animals. And I can speak from their perspective.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Yeah, it's been fascinating, you know, and I've been doing this for like 30 years, but I was trained as a veterinarian. So I came from all that schooling, you know, and conditioning and training and a certain way of thinking. And it's taken years for me to trust that this is real, but I've had enough evidence over time that I've come to believe it. And it's very subtle. It's very subtle. So that's what I do.
So do you do counselings with people who are having troubles with their animals or?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I've done that for a long time. More recently, I stopped doing that for a while and I'm doing this podcast, which I love. And I also have been doing a lot of writing. So I'm just publishing my second book on elephants and I've got lots more that I want to do.
Elephants are just incredibly, incredibly fascinating.
Oh my God, they're just amazing.
I see them as like the blue whales of the terrestrial realm.
Yes, exactly. You know, my first book was about elephants and whales. And they have so many similarities. You know, what I received is that both the elephants and the whales, they connect with the earth. With the grid lines, they use that word, grid lines of the earth.
Ley lines.
I think it's a little different than ley lines, at least from what I could read about. I don't know.
Definitely if power true. Lines going through the earth.
Power lines.
And it's not that doesn't necessarily be in straight lines. You know, there's power spots as well.
Yeah. And they form vortexes.
Yes. Ashland's vortex.
Yes.
Yeah. In a northern hemisphere, the Coriolis effects makes the water go down the drain, not the toilet, clockwise. In the southern hemisphere, counterclockwise. But Ashland, it goes down the drain counterclockwise. I've done this experiment myself.
Really?
So Ashland is in a negative vortex. Fill up your sink and watch the water drain counterclockwise. It may take more than once, but usually the more often than not, it will go counterclockwise. Whenever that's Ashland, it's going to go consistently clockwise.
You mean counter out of Ashland, it's going to go clockwise.
Outside of Ashland, it's going to go clockwise.
Oh my gosh, I never knew that.
Yeah, I asked a local tribal person here one time, and he goes, well, why do you think that is? And he goes, well, my elders told me it's from El Nino. El Nino, its force comes and it hits the shore, but it's such a powerful force, it doesn't stop there. The water energy stops there, but the spillover force comes in on land and causes eddies. Power here, so.
But it's only Ashland. It's not even the nearby cities.
There, it's only Ashland.
And
there are various negative vortexes on the West Coast. So yeah, it's worth a Google search.
Wow, that's really interesting. Yeah. Anyway, what the elephants and whales both told me is that they connect with the earth and they hold it stable, harmonious. And at the same time, they told me when they're moving about, when the whales are moving in the ocean and the elephants are walking on the land, they are projecting this intention of peace and harmony on the earth. So if the elephants and the whales are gone, we're going to have a lot more chaos on the planet and instability.
Well, I would have to think that every single one of these species do the exact same thing. And we're losing 10,000 species a year, last I've heard, by extinction. So all of those peace and love bringers, are doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. So what can we do?
Plant in our garden, reconnect, realize that we are living in a fearful lack mindset. And we need to encourage an abundance giveaway mindset and to be part of the economy that we're living in right now is completely abnormal to the laws of nature. There's nothing in nature that accumulates everything to itself. If there was, scientists would be saying, what's wrong with this person, this monkey taking all the bananas, but human beings do that. In indigenous cultures, when we had giveaways, we had potlatches, and that's the return of the surplus. You know, that is an economy based on nature, so we need to have an economy based on nature where there's a return of the surplus instead of all the surplus going to the billionaires, the giga millionaires and all this stuff. It's out of hand the way colonization has upended natural ways of being.
So you're saying that a way to reverse that or change that is by giving more away?
Yes.
And by doing more planting?
Yeah.
Planting of native species.
Native species, food plants. I'd go heavily on those two routes, because when you have 300 tomatoes, you don't want to compost those tomatoes. You want to give that goodness to your friends, and your friends are grateful, and they're going to remember you when they eat those tomatoes, they're going to say, yeah, you know what, that neighbor across the street, I think next year I'm going to give them all of my zucchini. So we create giveaways, and the problem is, if I have a giveaway, and I give away all the surplus in my house, then I'm not sure that anyone else is going to have a giveaway to take care of me. So we have to encourage this in a community level, this giveaway mentality. Robin Wall Kimmerer has a great essay called The Service Berry, and it's about the giveaway economy. So I encourage your listeners to check that out. One of her favorite examples was, she was talking to a hunter. He brought home a big game kill. The guy who was interviewing the hunter says, where are you going to store all the meat? And the hunter says, store all the meat? He goes, well, I'm going to store the meat in the bellies of my neighbors. and when they have a great kill, they're going to invite me and store their meat in my belly.
That's
the human economy. And we have to be in right relationship with that which gives us life. When we pluck, plant a seed, say a prayer, we give tobacco for or when we pick things or we take a life, because that's been a life force there. And when we pick it, we leave a hole there. So we want to put a prayer there, to keep it in balance, and have gratitude, for this thing, And when I grow a pepper, I have 100 seeds and I grow 100 pepper plants, which would give me 100,000 seeds. That's too many seeds. I'm afflicted with abundance now. Instead of a fear lack mindset, and then I make connections with my community, and that's more security, and we have the food security on top of the connection security, and it's all around food,
Well, you're coming back to where you started from. Yeah, all about food.
That's what I'm doing, why I'm doing, because food is the primary important thing in Indigenous cultures, if you want to show that you appreciate somebody, you give them food, you know? So, because that is life.
Food is life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. This has been so great. And I really appreciate all that you've shared.
Yeah. And I just want to close with one final thought. My people feel that we chose our parents. We chose the time that we're to be put down on this earth. And we're even given a brief glimpse of the potential of our life. So we chose everything that's happening to us. We chose to be here during this timeline, this purification, because we have a medicine given to us by the Creator when it held us in its arms and gave us this medicine to make this world better than it was before we got here. And so we're empowered by this. And we chose this time, purification, that between the time between the red medicine bundle and the white medicine bundle, because the Creator, during this time of transition, the Creator only sends its strongest spirits. And that's who we are. We're the ones who are going to see this through. We're the ones who are going to incur incredible suffering. But we have to harden our hearts towards hope, towards a knowledge that there is a brighter way of living on the other side of this colonized society that is destroying the earth and is tearing families apart. So we have a road to walk that we have to all learn to walk together, and we have to do it in unison, and we have to do it with our elder relatives, and we have to throw seeds wherever we go, metaphorically and literally.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome.
Thank you. It's been really, really great honor being with you. And so I'm going to close this now, and we will end with a brief blessing for the animals. Thank you all. We'd like to end this podcast by taking just a moment to be quiet. And we give thanks and blessings to these amazing animals that we share our lives with. They give us so much and ask for so little in return. We hope that you can keep the animals and all living beings in your heart and in your mind as you go about your day. Thank you so much for being here with us today.